Hey, it's John Kamal from 95.9 The Fox. This is the Fairfield County Live and Local Podcast, powered by the Sono Collection. My guest today is Mikhail Pivovarov. Mikhail is the bass player, producer, and founder of Love Raptor. Now, Love Raptor is not exactly, it's not a band. It's like a collective of musicians, and they get together once a week, and they create a new cover song. It could be a song from, like, a long time ago, or it could be something that's on the radio right now. But they do this once a week. They post it up online. You can check them out on Facebook and YouTube. But the musicianship is, it's incredible. If you haven't looked these guys up, definitely check them out. And the way that Mikhail creates this awesome project is, honestly, it was fascinating. So anyway, this is another pre-coronavirus episode, so you won't hear us talk about that at all. But other than that, enjoy. It's Mikhail Pivovarov, 95.9 The Fox, Fairfield County, live and local.
Bikinis on top, yeah.
It's the first time that that song has ever been sung in the studio, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's Fairfield County Live and Local. This is John. It's powered by 95.9 The Fox. Hanging out with my man, Mikhail Pivovarov from Love Raptor.
What up?
And hanging out with me is local Fairfield County musician and my good friend, Mr. Nicholas Yost.
Hello.
Welcome, dudes.
Thank you.
Those are very solid shades.
Thank you, dude. Nobody can see my eyes. It's not allowed.
That's Minecraft, right? Is that what they
call it? No, they're just 8-bit shades.
It's dude.
It evokes Minecraft.
Right, it's pixelated. We love the 90s around here.
That's right.
Those are 64-bit sunglasses. Or actually, no, they're 8-bit. They're 8-bit, 8 to 16. Yeah. That's right. That's
Super
right.
Nintendo era.
And by the way, if you didn't know, this entire thing is on YouTube. So if you're listening and you're like, why are you talking about something that I couldn't possibly see? Go check it out on YouTube, 95.9 The Fox. We got clips on Facebook, Instagram, all that good shit. See, I did it.
Mm-hmm. We just had this conversation
to not do it. It's because I'm too comfortable around you guys. That's the problem.
Yeah, bleep it
That's
out.
That's the problem. No, I will. But I will. But it's the principle of the thing. This is why we do this recorded.
Well, you do this professionally, right?
No, good God, no. Are you kidding me? No one lets me near a microphone around here. That's insanity. It's insanity. I'm on from 10 to 2 weekdays. While you're at work, I host the 90s at noon.
Oh, boy. Lovely.
So the reason I invited you here, and you did my old show, my old podcast, too.
I did. That was a great time.
You've got this fantastic collective of Fairfield County and New York musicians that you call Love Raptor.
Yeah.
And you put out weekly content.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Hell or high water.
Which is insane to me, by the way, because when we get into your process a little bit, I can't believe you pull this off on a weekly basis.
Me neither.
But it's literally you like to keep it to funk covers. I like to say it's a little bit wider than funk, but it's covers of songs that we all know, whether it's, you know, classic hits or today's pop songs, whatever. But it's your own spin on these tunes. And it always does have a funk vibe to it,
like
definitely. But
idiom.
I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to do that indie band thing and not limit you to one simple genre.
Sure. And I think the first time we had the conversation, too, I was very adamant about, like, no, like, it's funk. And
well, it's part of the branding, and I get that.
It is. And I think it's just, you know, when you need to. You know, nowadays you need to be able to catch somebody with like one word. We need to like the one word descriptor of it. So I say like, yeah, it's funk, but really there's, you know, soul, R&B, you know, funk,
disco,
jazz, you know, fusion. It's so many things. So many things. But at the core of it all, like there's, you know,
as an outsider, I seem to think that it's like, it's just, you know, it's something you can dance to.
Sure.
It's like, it's like a disco, funk, you know, funk is what you dance to.
Right, exactly.
You know, so.
Whether it be slow dancing or fast dancing, you got to be able to, you know, shake your butt a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's groovy.
And you know, you were saying it's a collective of, you know, kind of Fairfield County guys, but I mean, it is so much more than that. You know, we got a bunch of guys from Brooklyn, Manhattan, all the way up to Massachusetts.
Like who? Name names.
Name names. Okay. Well, locally we have, you know, like my core cats that, you know, do a lot of these with me. Billy Ruger on guitar.
Yeah.
He's absolutely incredible. Sam Oliver is a great drummer from the area. Wow. He's done a bunch of these with me. With this dude, CJ, Charles Armstrong.
Yeah.
Incredible keyboard player.
Nice.
Super young dude. I think he's... like what, 19, 20?
Wow. I think when we spoke last time, you said he was 18. So yeah,
that was like, that was a year.
I think
he's like 19 now, but
that's crazy.
It's just incredible. He's, absolutely out of this world.
And he had his first he had his first one word that that he sang on recently, right? What was the one that I saw that he sang on?
He did. He's done like two or three that he sang on. The one that I just put out, I want to say, yeah. What's today? Saturday?
Today's Saturday.
The one I put out yesterday was with him singing Owl City's Fireflies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but then he did. We did My Girl with him.
Yes, it was My Girl. That's exactly what it was.
Absolutely amazing. And you know, and it's so funny because I put it out and then I tend to credit whoever wrote the song. So I was like, oh, it's My Girl, and it's, you know, Smokey Robinson funk cover. And right. I got so much flack for like, no, it's not a Smokey Robinson tune. It's a Temptation song. And I was like, do your homework, dogs.
Smokey Robinson.
Smokey Robinson wrote that song.
He wrote everything.
So if you haven't seen it, it's the same room. It's your studio that you have at your house. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a group of that you are slowly developing like a core four. Three, but it's always, it's recorded live.
Yes.
And it's taped live.
Yeah. So the central idea of this whole thing is, we go in completely unprepared.
Sure.
I gather.
What, like for the day, like on the song?
Yeah. Like nothing is prepared at all. Okay. So like we'll walk in and I'll gather a group of guys together and girls, and it's, you know, it's people that I'm a music producer for, you know, my day job, quote unquote. And these are just guys that I've been making music with for a long time. A lot of them I've then started meeting through this project because it kind of became a much bigger community. But at the core of it, it was me bringing together just incredible session players and saying, let's just be off the chain. Let's just see what happens. Let's get weird and let's do, you know, let's have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
But we come in completely unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
Before, when we started, I would at least try to pick the song before we all got in the room together. Now I don't even do that anymore. We just get in the room. We say, "All right, cool guys, what do we want to do?"
This is the part that I find insane, because if you watch these videos, first of all, because the arrangements are awesome, they're really catchy. The video production is excellent, and the sound quality is. I mean, you're a music producer. It's produced by a professional music producer, and I mean, like, you know, some of your. Not to tell tales out of school. Johnny Winter's last album, I think, was one that you were an engineer on.
The last two records, what I will say is I had a hand in those.
Had a hand, okay.
Of the way things are credited and the messy way that the music industry works. I worked on the last two Johnny Winter records in some capacity.
Yeah.
I had a very heavy hand engineering and doing a lot of, you know, just really fun work on the last Beach House record, Seven, which, you know, maybe a fraction of your audience may know who they
right,
are.
Right.
But yeah, man.
But like my point is it's really well done.
Thank you.
To a level where I feel like a lot of people who, you know, YouTube or blog or vlog or whatever you want to call it, like, strive to put out videos of that high quality, like, you know, on a monthly basis, or if it is weekly, it's all they do. That's their job. You have a very busy day job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you, like, so just from start to finish, just walk me through the process of making a Love Raptor video.
I
want to
hear more of that, the creative process that happens at the beginning of that day.
So the creative process is I get up, I have some breakfast. Breakfast is very important. It's the most important meal. There it is.
We don't need to go that step by step
in the beginning. So you know, we get together.
I
try to prep the room before everybody walks in, so that they can walk in. We can set up our instruments and just get right into it. But like I was saying before, we used to try to pick the song more for the singer's benefit than anything, because they need to know the lyrics. But now we just kind of go in. I gather a group of musicians that I think will work well together. And we just kind of go for it. We sit down and we say, all right, cool, man. What song do you want to do?
Okay.
And we pick one that the singer hopefully knows. If not, then, you know, we'll pull up a lyric sheet and we'll strategically tape it right under the camera.
Sure, make sure camera can't see that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As long as you kind of put it right under the camera. If they're looking at the lyric sheet, it looks like they're
exactly.
I'm giving away all the trades.
No, that's okay.
It's terrible.
What are cue cards?
But
you know?
Pick a song and then we'll just start jamming. And sometimes, you know, the singer might be like looking at the lyrics, trying to memorize them, whatever. And we'll just like start playing grooves and we'll kind of go, okay, cool. Like, what key works for you? And within about 45 minutes, we get a very basic idea of where this thing is going to actually, in about 10 minutes, we get a very basic idea. In 45 minutes, we should have the whole thing fleshed out.
Yeah.
And we just hit record. And then we do three or four takes, sometimes more, sometimes less. There's a couple of songs we got in one.
Nice.
And we just go for it, man. And it's like, it's very improvisational, and we try not to go too crazy. It's like, let's just do it. Let's get it to feel good. And, you know, sometimes there might be a wrong note. There might be like a flub here or there, but we keep it, man. It's like,
yeah,
it's the way records used to be made in the 60s. It's the way that Stax Records and Motown mm-hmm. were all made. It was mm-hmm. a bunch of cats that went into a room and they played the song. And that's kind of what we're trying to go back to. And, you know, there's a bunch of bands out there, too, that are doing a similar thing. Like, if you look at the way, like, bands like Wolfpack or Scary Pockets record, it's a very similar.
Yeah, that's true.
There we go. Thank you.
You know, it's a bit of the same vibe of, like, let's get together and let's play our instruments, and we're going to do it live, and it's going to be one take, and it's going to be real. There's no editing. You know, we don't mess around afterwards. It's like, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
Would you say that in terms of the arrangement, are you having an overall directorial, you know, composition kind of hand in it? Or is like, say, the guitar player, you know, writing like the first groove for, you know, the arrangement you're doing? And then maybe the drummer has an idea. Like, is it a collective writing experience?
It's a completely collective experience. Yeah. I try not to be domineering, like, mm-hmm. you know, it's easy to say that it's my project, but I really try to get everybody's involvement as equal as possible. Everybody has a say. Like, the whole point of this was that I wanted to bring people together, guys that, you know, I've been making records with, and mm-hmm. see what happened when we didn't have to fit our musicality and our artistry to, like, another artist's proclivities. Like, you know, usually when I'm making a record, I'm trying to make
I was gonna say that's a producer talking right there.
Exactly. You're playing
that's a producer and engineer.
Exactly.
Talking.
And now I want it to be like, all right, let's just completely unleash and let's just do something that makes us happy. But everybody has an equal say. If you're in the room, like, I will, you know, everybody will listen to your, you know, to your comments, and we mm-hmm. try everything, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, I've definitely had, like, one of our drummers, Sam, who does, you know, a lot of these with us, he's just, you know, a really absolutely brilliant musical mind. And it's so funny because he's playing drums. He's playing a non-melodic instrument. But, you know, we'll, like, do a take, and then he'll turn to me and he'll be like, yo, Mick, like, try this bass line instead. And he'll, like, sing it for me and, like, tell me the notes, and I'll try it. And I'll be like, oh, wow, that is a really great idea. I'd be like, yeah, let's go to, like, you know, let's go to, like, a flat six chord here. And it's just like, wow, you heard that. And
I love drummers that can do that. Spencer Inch can do that.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah,
like,
oh, yeah, dude.
Shout out Spencer Inch, by the way.
Shout out Spencer. And he's got a couple of these with me. He's absolutely brilliant.
Yep.
Everybody has a say. Everybody, you know, has an equal weight in that room. Yeah.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah, dude. So, I mean, how do you select people who are going to be part of it? Not like you're sitting there with, like, you know, just like, I want that one. But, like, how do you find
maybe a little bit going around scouting people?
But I was going to say, like, yeah, how do people become a part of this project?
So when this started, I had, you know, I'd been making records for 10 years, and I had kind of a core group of guys that I loved working with, guys and girls that I loved working with. And I started by just making a bunch of phone calls. And I called a bunch of people and I said, hey, what do you guys think about this? And actually, it's so funny. We were just talking about this earlier. One of the first calls I made was to Alan Evans, my buddy Alan Evans from Soul Live.
Yeah.
He's an incredibly talented drummer, singer, producer, engineer. Like, he's
also Alan Evans Trio, too, if you've seen that. That's yeah.
He's just an incredible jack of all trades. And so I called him and I kind of told him about this idea. And he was, for whatever reason, my first call, and he just jumped at the idea. He was like, oh, my God, I love everything about this. Let's do it. I'm in. The funny thing is that we still haven't actually gotten together. It was like a year and a half ago, and we still haven't gotten in a room to do this.
Right.
We will. We keep talking about it, but, you know, he's 2.5 hours north in Mass. But I called
and
him.
And a busy guy.
Very busy. But I called him, and he was so excited, and that and, like, the first kind of 5 to 10 phone calls of guys that I was regularly working with at the time really inspired me, and everybody just was ready to jump at the opportunity. And funny enough, Alan introduced me to Chris Yonker, who is a Connecticut musician. He's just incredibly talented keyboard player. So he and I got together.
Chris Yonker from you can hear him, Jen Durkin in the Business.
I did
an episode of this with Jen Durkin before.
Yep.
And gosh, who else does Chris play
so
with?
He plays with Alan Evans Trio.
Alan Evans Trio, right. Who, yeah.
He's got his own project, Yunktoff, and mm-hmm. he put out a record, I think, under his name, Chris Yonker, last year. Just all really, really good stuff.
Yep,
really,
yep,
really
yep.
great stuff. Amazing guy.
Wasn't he also playing with... He's playing with someone else as well, right?
Tracy Joe and the Stoned Crows.
Oh, that.
He did that.
Oh, okay.
He's playing in another like blues funk band with me called Frank Selman and the Love Rocket.
Okay.
Great name. we're doing a gig in the city this Thursday. Yes, we're doing a gig in the city this Thursday.
Nice.
If you can catch me and Chris and Sam Oliver, who plays drums in Love Raptor as well.
Right on.
We're going to be at the Bitter End on Thursday night.
Oh, okay.
So, cool.
Yeah,
okay.
It'll be a really fun night of like funk and blues and, you know, good stuff. But yeah, so I started calling people around and everybody was just like really excited about it. And at the beginning, I had maybe a roster of like 15 people and I just started calling. I said, okay, cool. This person on keys, this person on guitar, this person on drums, and this person on vocals. Let's just get together and see what happens.
How does that decision-making process get made, though? Is it like, is there a personal compatibility thing? I know I'm asking you to like kind of tell tales out of school here, but like, is it like,
yeah.
I feel like these two guys would work well together, guys or gals would work well together. Is it like, how do you say this person?
Sometimes it's a little bit of that. Sometimes it's just a little bit of like, I wonder how these two people would work together. Sometimes it's also just, not to pat myself on the back about being too much about benevolence or whatever, but like a little bit of it is I would love to introduce these two people because I think they would go on to do cool things together. Maybe not even including me, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I really want to say that there's a big science to it, but occasionally it's like I have this list and I kind of call the last couple of people that I worked with and say, hey, you available on Wednesday?
Right. Yeah. It's whoever's free on Wednesday.
Exactly. Or whatever day of the week. And sometimes what it comes down to is if somebody's bringing in somebody else, like we just had this really lovely singer from Stanford, Dina Montefiscoli, who... one of our guitar players brought in, and you know, we got a date that was going to work, and I had her, and then it was like, okay, let's find who's available that day. And you know, I kind of have my couple of guys that play drums that mm-hmm. you know are really in it. I'm always playing bass in these, so that's easy,
right?
And I had a couple of keyboard players, and Chris happened to be available that day, so we kind of got in the room together and did it, and it was great. I wish there was more of a science to it, but sometimes it's just, kind of dumb luck and seeing what happens.
Sure.
What I try to do is I try never to have the exact same group, twice. So each time
that.
We get together, we might do like two videos. But I try not to do two sessions with the exact same group of people. So, for example, if we do have the same drummer, bass player, guitar player, keys player, and singer, I'll try to at least add one person. So it's a little bit of a different vibe, and we just
get
to experiment. Like, I get to play a little bit of Alchemist in that sense.
Yeah, right. So. Well, and it's such a good... I was talking to Isaac Young from No Mind and PX3
mm-hmm.
last night, actually, and he specifically said, and you can check out their episode of this as well, he said it's scary the amount of talent that's in Connecticut in general, but I think especially Fairfield County and the greater Fairfield County area. I mean, Nick, you can speak to this. Like you've been all over the place. Like it's why is that?
Money and power. Everyone has the money around here to throw towards the arts. And
the
trust fund band thing is definitely kind of the sad reality of it. It's like the there isn't a financial stress. It allows people,
for a lot of people,
artists.
Yes.
There's just a lot of art and a lot of appreciation of art around here. And, like a lot of fantastic education, just really great music education for some reason in Fairfield County. And then mm-hmm. Bridgeport on top of it is just like somehow just like this funk destination, like underground funk destination. I don't know.
Has become in the last 10 years, I think, too, especially.
Hilariously, like I just moved to Bridgeport and Fairfield like 5 or 6 years ago. Yeah. And this whole thing has been floating around in my head for like, much longer than that. But it was just by complete chance that I lived down the street from Bryak and the Acoustic. And I mean, those are like the two funk destinations
for Southern Connecticut. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Acoustic is just what they've done to the place is just wonderful.
They do amazing stuff there.
Yeah. And FTC, and the Bijou, and there's all this great music. And
Bijou,
so
very
much,
underrated venue too.
And there's
yeah.
so much. There's so many different like nationalities and people from other places that live in this area, it's such a melting pot as well. Yeah. You know.
I mean, I'm not from here. I'm from Russia.
Exactly.
That's right.
Which a lot of people forget.
Just in case you were wondering that Mikhail Pivovarov was originally from Russia. It's true.
From Nebraska.
It's hard to believe.
If music is a culmination of your point of view in life, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of point of view.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fairfield County.
Yeah.
And around New York City.
Oh yeah.
You know, spillover.
Well, and I think that definitely, you know, has a hand in it too. Mm-hmm. And it's not even just people coming from New York to here. It's that everyone's so close to New York. I feel like there's an extra drive. It's like, it's right there. If I just work a little bit harder, if I just can get a little bit, I can, it's not even that far.
Yeah.
Like I could still do studio work and go on auditions and still live right here.
Yeah, but it's
in
like
my
still
house.
Like it's also, it's like its own world. It's like its own universe.
Oh, it's a world apart entirely. No, it's a. I remember when, because I lived in the city until I was 15, and I remember when I moved to.
Yeah, I survived like a year and a half. Maybe
no, man,
know,
no. This was
like,
this was
throw me in, like put me in the woods. You
this
know?
Was birth to 15, and if you really want to be exact about it, it was 18 because my dad still lived there, so I was still a legal resident and going back there every weekend until 18. And like I remember when I moved to Connecticut. I was in a car with some buddies of mine, and like they were like, oh, let's go to Wendy's, and I was like, oh, cool. Where's there a Wendy's in Fairfield? They're like, oh, no, it's in Milford. And I was like, we're gonna go to a different town.
Yeah.
What do you mean we're gonna go to a different town? Like that's insane. Like you gotta understand, growing up in New York, you're like, it's you don't leave the island. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like you don't do that. So just even the idea of going to a anyway. Sorry, this was a whole. Riff
it was
on
tangential. What do you know what I mean?
That was one.
Yeah.
That was definitely a word.
Yeah.
People in different places are different.
Yeah. Point is, New York is a complete. You know, it's its own little universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Outside of it, but I mean, but you know, Fairfield County kind of is too in its own way.
We got a thing out here.
There's a lot of cross pollination.
Absolutely.
Of talent that goes on. And it seems like you're kind of, you know, sitting there just picking and choosing the right, you know, the right people to get in.
I let the universe choose for me.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, you know, if you want to talk about the cross-pollination, I mean, yeah, you just have to look at Love Raptor and the cats that come through. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, just last week we released a video with, who was in this one?
Yeah, I'm looking at the screen you have here. There's like 24 videos or something. No, six.
So there's
six times
yeah, there's
three,
like
eight,
18 here, but we've released almost 70 videos since
well,
we've been
and,
doing this.
And so 70 videos, 52 weeks in a year. So you've been and that literally
that tracks,
means
yeah.
you've been doing it for that exact amount of time.
So we've been releasing for about a year and a half.
Never missed a week.
And it sometimes kills me.
That's crazy that you've never missed a week.
Yeah, man. I've done
this song with Drew so many times. When I saw that,
Citizen
song,
Cope.
Like, yeah,
that is the definitive version of that song.
The definitive
version. Like,
yeah,
he does an amazing acoustic. But that version, that's my favorite. Mm-hmm.
Drew loves
on top
that
of the
song.
Yeah.
He was so pumped when that video came out.
Yeah, he pointed at the sun's gonna rise, Citizen Cope. Dude, like
shout out Drew Angus,
man. He's the homie. He's the reason that I know either of you guys.
That is
right.
True.
Yeah, that is
yeah,
true.
That is true.
That is 100% true.
But. Where was I going with this? Yeah, so like a week ago, you know, we had Gene Taylor from Brooklyn come up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not a week ago. He came up several months ago, but we just put it out. So, you know, we got cats from, you know, we got Gene, we got Tommy Weeks on sax, who's, I think, Hartford-ish. But he's in Funky Dogs Brass Band.
Tommy's from Ridgefield.
I was going to say Ridgefield originally.
Me and
Nick played in a band with Tommy briefly before
he
got way too big to be playing in a band with us. Tommy Weeks, Funky Dogs, Sophistafunk, check
Bands.
Him
yep.
out. The man.
Yep, yep.
And
just
catch
to
him
the,
in the gym. You know,
catch him in the gym.
Biceps like what?
And, you know, I mean, speaking of the cross-pollination, I mean, Sophistafunk is like Syracuse area.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I saw them play a little while ago, and now Sophistafunk, we are talking about doing like a Sophistafunk X Love Raptor thing. We're gonna
we're gonna do some
90s hip hop stuff. It's gonna be a good time.
Oh, please do that.
We're gonna do that.
Their keys player. What's his name? Chris.
He's incredible.
Oh my god.
Entire melodic and rhythmic backbone of that band. It's gonna be hilarious when we get into the studio because I saw them play at the Acoustic, and they just completely tore the roof off the place. Yeah. I mean, playing amazing bass lines with one hand and then doing, like, key stuff, you know, right hand stuff.
That was recently, right? Wasn't that,
like
this
past
month?
Yeah, it was like a week ago. And I just know he and I are, like, are going to be like, all right, well, I'm a bass player, but you're, like, a bass player and of this, and, like, so it's going to be like, all right, what do I do now? Because I got to let him do his thing, you know? I'm just going to get out of his way. I'm just going to stand there and go, But okay, so you were asking about putting this stuff out every week.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's not always on the same day of the week. For a while, it was Wednesdays. Then I missed a Wednesday, and then it was like, all right, I'm going to do Thursdays for a minute, and then I missed a Thursday, and then it was like, I'm going to do Fridays for a minute. I've never missed a week, and sometimes it kills me because I do. I produce music full time, and I'm always working on a project. Like, I've got like 4 projects that are running right now.
Right.
It's bananas, and I love it. I love doing the work, but. It's I don't always have the time to do it, but I've kind of gotten it down to a science where if I'm really rushing and I really just sit down and I turbo focus, I can probably crank out a mix and edit a video together in about 2.5 hours. But that's like I gotta fly through.
Yeah,
and sometimes you just don't get as precious with the mixing, and that's one of the other reasons that I started doing this project in the first place. Actually, was to force myself to put music out. Every week, it was going to be this thing where, like, I have to do it. It's going to go out, and it. One of the things that it taught me as a producer and a mixer is that nothing is ever truly finished in music. We don't get too precious and finish our things, because when we do, we get things like the Beach Boys' "Smile," which took 15 years.
I like how you describe it. Get too precious with it, because it feels like it's like you can't let go, and then you're depriving other people of hearing this amazing thing
that's
created,
a really great point. Yeah,
you know.
So I just sometimes have to push it out. I have to say, nope, I've been doing this for 2 hours. I need to go to bed. It's midnight, and I got to have this thing live at 11 tomorrow, and I need to go to sleep.
Wow.
I say midnight, but the reality is it's 3 a.m. I'm dying. Yeah. I need to go to sleep now.
Yeah.
Like, so we put out Fireflies by Owl City yesterday. I started mixing that song. I had a bunch of computer problems earlier in the week, and I had to basically reinstall my whole operating system, blah, 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 boring tech talk. Sure. Long story short, I couldn't sit down to actually work until midnight on 11:59 on Thursday night. I mixed into 2 a.m., woke up at 8, sent the mix to a friend of mine and said, dude, tell me this is okay. I need to make sure that I didn't screw anything up. He gave me like 1 or 2 quick notes. He's also a brilliant mixer.
Sure.
He gave me 1 or 2 quick notes. I just slapped it together, very quickly did my video edit, and pushed it out, and it got out at noon.
Wow.
And it was insanity. So like some weeks it kills me to do it, but I do it.
Can I give you a piece of advice?
Please.
Don't get married and have children. That's gonna go out the window so fast. You're gonna miss weeks, you're gonna miss entire months.
Yeah. Bounce mixes off your baby. They're like, does this one sound good? Does this one sound good? You can tell me. It's okay. Don't be so silent.
I'll bring my kid over. Just so you can get there.
Now we've been talking a lot about Love Raptor and like what your process, but can we dive a little deeper into like your own musical journey? Like when did you start playing and what brought you to music production and your project now?
That's a really good question. So I think I started playing when I was like 11 years old. That was the first time that I picked up a guitar. Well, it's not true. My mother will tell you that I started playing when I was like 4 years old. I had a toy piano she tells this great story that she used to like come home from work in Moscow, and I would be banging on a toy piano, and my grandma would have like this toy drum.
It's like the one with all the little detuned bells in it.
I'm really mad I still don't have it, because that would be so cool right
now.
It's just like throw it into productions.
Feel like a Jimmy Fallon thing with the kid.
But I used to say to my grandma, let's go play jazz, and it would be just like me sitting on the keyboard. I'm sure there's an allegory in there somewhere. But
that's wonderful.
There's a great joke about jazz music in there somewhere.
Exactly,
I'm not
somewhere.
Sure.
We're not gonna dig for it.
We don't have to look for it, but it's
I know
there.
Too many jazz musicians.
But so I picked up a guitar and really started learning for the first time to actually, play coherent music when I was 11 years old.
Nice.
And I did that because
And you were in the States at this point.
Yeah, I was living in Los Angeles.
Okay, cool.
So, and I did that because a bunch of my other friends in, I guess, middle school at that point were picking up instruments, and I just kind of, like, felt really left out. So I was like, all right, cool, I'm going to, like, their parents were all forcing them. They were like, okay, you have to take piano lessons, you have to take cello lessons. And they were like, they were kind of miserable, but I thought it was the coolest thing that they could play an instrument. And I was like the one guy in my group of friends, I'm also consequently the only one who stuck with music. I was the one guy in my group of friends that said, Mom, I want to do this. I want to pick up a guitar. So I did, and I started taking music lessons at the Colburn School of Performing Arts in Los Angeles. It's a very cool school. I had a very great guitar teacher, Kenton Youngstrom.
Is that where you were living? You were living in L.A.
I was living in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah. I moved around.
Sorry,
you
said that.
I did, yeah. I lived in South Central for a while, and then I lived in downtown L.A.
Okay.
We were, like, literally one block over from the Disney Hall.
Wow.
Yeah, we got very lucky with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I started then, and I was playing, by the time I was like 14, I was playing punk rock in garage bands. That was a lot of fun.
And was this, you'd already switched over to bass at this point?
No,
you were still on
guitar? So I didn't switch to bass until college.
Okay.
But at that time we were playing punk music in, like at the Whiskey A Go Go and the Roxy and the House of Blues, which.
It's cool,
oh,
man.
It's so cool.
No, it's cool. So yeah. We got
Hollywood Boulevard, you know, like.
Yeah.
Dude, no, it was amazing. We got so lucky. We got to open for Flogging Molly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, with bananas.
That's great.
We opened for the LA Guns. I mean, you know, I was like a 16, 17 year old punk kid. Like, it was really crazy. I mean, like, I, you know, met Gene Simmons, hung out with his kid a whole bunch. Like,
yeah.
It was super, like, the more I think back on it, I was like, that was super weird that all of that happened.
Yeah.
And we were terrible. We were so bad.
Of course. Well, you're supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Punk is attitude.
That's
right?
The fun part.
That we had in spades. the attitude we had in spades. But anyway, and then when I was 16, we moved out to the East Coast. My mother got a job at Western Connecticut State. She's actually the chair of the World Languages Department there now. Cool. And that was my senior year of high school. So I went into my senior year of high school at a school in Connecticut. I went to Danbury High. And that was the first time that I had the opportunity to have music education in an actual school. Like when I was in L.A. in middle school and high school, that's not true. In middle school, I did go to a performing arts school. But my high school experience, I went to a programming and business school.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of studying computer programming, doing all that stuff. So I got to Danbury High. And, you know, before this point, I didn't think of music as like a career I could really pursue. But I got to Danbury High and I started taking AP Music Theory. I had a bunch of really great music teachers. Before the end of the year, I had just decided this is what I'm going to be doing. And I had like an 8-track hard disk recorder that I started kind of messing around with. And we were making little records with friends in the Music Honor Society, Triam, shout out, woot woot. and yeah, kind of towards the end of the year, I was very confused and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I didn't know that music production was a thing that you could study and go for. So I ended up going to WestCon for my first semester of college. And about 2 weeks in, a friend of mine that played bass in my punk band in LA. Like I was talking to him. We were, you know, he was starting college. I was starting college. I was like, I'm very confused. I don't know what to do. And this guy, Gil, my buddy, he says, well, man, you know what? My old bass teacher, he graduated from the music conservatory at SUNY Purchase.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was a really great school. Why don't you go check that out? Long story short, I did. I got
it's a
in.
Fun school, by the way.
It's a terrific, place.
I knew another person who went to Purchase for music production as well.
Ooh,
and,
ooh.
His name was Spino, Matt Spino.
That's a familiar name. He might not have been there at the same time I was.
He might be a little younger than you.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I got out in 2009.
Okay.
I was gonna say I'm the oldest guy in the room. I think we're 89, 88, 87, right?
Wow, that is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I forgot that you're a year old. Right.
Yeah, maybe
we talked about that.
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I went to school for production, and that was about when I picked up bass, actually. The chair of the department at the time, Joe Ferry, he was a bass player, and he played like ska music and a little bit of funk and like punk and jazz and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And kind of through him and just through starting to understand what music production was all about and what making a record is and understanding what you know, a tight pocket is and kind of learning how that's the backbone of any good recording.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of got me to understanding that the most important part of all of that, you know, there's three elements. There's, you know, the drums, the bass, and the vocal. Everything else can suck, but as long as those three elements are tight, you're
pop.
Golden. So that kind of gravitated me towards bass. I was producing records and we had, you know, I was like getting bass players from the jazz department and we had like a lot of cross collaboration at Purchase. But every time I would bring a, you know, a jazz guy in to play like a pop tune or whatever, they would play a lot. There would be like a lot of notes going on, and sometimes it was just like, nah, dude, I just need you to like
play the two and the play
footballs,
you know,
man. Just like boom, 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 boom. Like that's it. That's the whole part. And sometimes it was just easier for me to pick up the bass myself than to have to explain it. And anyway, that's kind of how I got into it, and I've just been playing bass ever since.
So just because this was my favorite story that you told the last time we did this, you tell Nick and the people listening right now about how you almost got drafted by the Russian military.
What?
So Mikhail, and just to give a little background, so Mikhail here moved here from the USSR.
It was by the time I left, it was Russia.
Oh, it was Russia. So how old were you then?
So we left Russia when I was 5. It was 92 or 93.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Never mind.
The Iron Curtain fell in 91.
Yeah.
And we couldn't have left before then because there was no way anybody was going to be leaving the curtain was there. I got out, we got out in 92, 93, and we actually spent a year in Canada first.
Nick, you're going to love this.
It's a hilarious story.
Okay.
So we spent a year in Canada, and then we would go back, and we were in Russia for like 3 months. Then we moved to Los Angeles based on my mom's studies. She got into USC. Mm. Not going to go into all that. But so for a very long time, we would be in the United States for like 8 or 9 months out of the year. And then we would go back for a month for winter break. So I would spend like Christmas and New Year's with my family in Russia, actually just New Year's because we don't celebrate Christmas, whole other thing. New Year's is like Christmas over there.
Oh, okay.
That's when we do the big party and the big dinner. Anyway, and the presents, all that.
Yeah.
But for every year until I was 18 years old, we would spend, you know, eight or nine months there, 8 or 9 months here, 3 months there, and we'd keep going back and forth. As soon as I turned 18, my grandfather, God rest his soul, he very bluntly said, don't come back until after you're 27, 28. And I was like, Granddad, why? And he said, because they're going to take you into the army and they're going to use you, they're going to throw you in front of tanks in Chechnya. And I thought, no, wow. Granddad, you're crazy. That's never going to happen. And he said, no, like, mark my words, don't come back. My grandfather is a war veteran. He, you know, he's got experience in the, you know, in the Russian military. But, you know, after checking the laws, I kind of realized, yeah, no, I really shouldn't go back because they can draft me. And the funny thing is, so I'm an American citizen. I do have a passport. But I cannot get a Russian visa on my American passport because what they do is they kind of say, oh, no, if you're naturalized, if you're a natural born Russian citizen, you have to renew your citizenship and you have to get a new Russian passport to go back so that they can track your movements and basically stop you on your way out and say, hey, wait a minute, you're a Russian citizen. Where were you at this time? You were supposed to go to the army because there's a military draft going on.
Right.
But anyway, I thought this was all, you know, a bunch of bull honky. And but respecting my grandfather's wishes, I didn't go back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was 27 and my grandfather passed away. And when they were cleaning out my grandpa and grandma's room, they found a box. So last time I said it was under his bed, my mom then corrected me. She said, no, it was in his desk. He had like a box in his desk. But it was a box of all of the draft notices that I was getting delivered to the apartment in Moscow. Because I was still, I'm still a Russian citizen and I'm recorded as a resident of that apartment. They've been sending me draft notices like twice a year, every year since I turned 18. And the funniest part about this is the first draft notice was like, very, formal, but like, nice wording in black ink that just says, hi, yes, you've been, selected for the military draft. Please report to, such and such draft office on such and such street on such and such day. Obviously, I didn't show up. And then, like, 6 months later, another notice comes and it's, very similarly worded. They're all kind of, it's a standardized document.
Let me guess, though, by the end of this, they're like threatening your family and forcing your name.
So the first four of them are just like, pretty tame. Yeah. And then, they start getting a little less friendly. They start being like, there's no more please after the fourth or fifth one. And then they just start appearing in red ink. And it's just like,
red,
show up.
Red ink. You know, red ink.
That was the funniest thing, is that they changed from black ink to red ink.
Some Mother Russia hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
Red Army
red
wants
ink.
You, son.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
But so, yeah, and I still haven't been back. The last time I was back was I was 18 years old, and that must have been 05. 06, and I have not been back since.
Bro, are you like scared to go back? Because if I was you, I would be scared to go back.
Yeah, dude. So when can they not just draft you anymore? Like after 35 or something?
No, supposedly 27. Supposedly 27. Although I am like mildly worried about the.
What, you'll just get like arrested for draft dodging or something?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I genuinely don't know. So,
that's,
you know,
so
if the Love Raptor videos abruptly stop, you'll know why.
Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll change the banner to just, like, the Red Army.
Yeah.
I'd be sorry, guys.
The Russian men's choir and sailor outfits all, like, singing you off.
Exactly.
I love that story so much.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Let's
No wonder your grandfather was like so paranoid.
No, dude, he knew.
Don't
oh my
come
gosh.
Back.
Yeah. Jeez.
That's
I couldn't even go back for his funeral. Like, because he was just saying, he's like, do not come back under any circumstance. I didn't go back.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. What a sacrifice.
Yeah.
I love that story.
It was bananas.
That is absolutely bananas.
So, okay, so
well, here, so hold on, so we do have to wrap up.
Oh, we do. Okay,
but,
sorry.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, we can talk for hours.
but I do want to. You've been talking. We talked off the air about you potentially bringing this act live.
Oh yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So
we got
a whole lot of plans for 2020. So the project, since its inception, was, you know, hey, we're going to play funk covers in the studio. We're going to think them up right on the spot, and then we're never going to play these songs again, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be always covers, and that's kind of how it started. This year, you know, we've started getting a lot of interest from, you know, some pretty cool bookers, some pretty great venues in the city and around here. You know, I spoke to some of the cats at The Acoustic, and I've actually had some conversations with a dude that books for the Brooklyn Bowl.
Nice.
And yeah, we're hoping to take this show on the road pretty soon.
Cool,
I'm still not 100% sure what form that's going to take. But you know, look out for that. You can find any of that information either on our Facebook page, which is, you know, facebook.com/loveraptorfunk, or our Patreon page, which, I always encourage people to go to if you really want to, you know, the best way to support the band and the best way to get our recordings is to, sign up for our Patreon, which is, you know, really awesome mm-hmm. system. It's kind of like a monthly Kickstarter situation. So you give us either suggested donation or whatever you want to give us. And, you keep up to date with all of our news, and we send, that's where anybody who's on Patreon supporting us there, I give the MP3s of all of our recordings out for free if you're
nice.
A Patreon subscriber. But yeah, so, I mean, live shows, they're happening. There's not much more I can say
Sweet.
About it yet, but we're in talks with Brooklyn Bowl, a couple of other venues in the city, and some venues out here. And the other cool thing that has kind of evolved from all of this is we've also started doing originals, which I never thought we would do, but
I think that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm excited to hear what that is.
We have one that we put out 2 weeks ago now called Double Bill, and it is thusly called because there's two Billy Rugers in that video. That's the one time that we've ever...
I saw that, yeah. You've been having fun with that technology
fun with that, yeah. That's the one time that we've ever actually done an overdub because... so that was a day where we had our keyboard player for about half the day, and he had to split at like 4, and Billy, Tommy, Sam, and I were like, well, everybody else is still cool to hang. You guys want to just like jam and see if we come up with something else? And we did, and we came up with kind of a Meters-esque instrumental funk tune.
Mm.
And we didn't have a keyboard player, so we kind of did it guitar, bass, sax, drums in the room. And then we're like, all right, hey, Billy, why don't you go in there and just do a one-take overdub? And we did that. I videoed him, and I composited the take of us live in the room and the take of him playing keys. But that's our first original, and we're hoping to do more of those this year. Like my stretch goal, if I can kind of make this happen, is to do maybe one original a month and 3 covers.
Dude, make them. We're going to play
Something
them on
here. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was great.
For real. All right. Yeah. Mikhail Pivovarov, Love Raptor. Make sure you check him out. Nick Yost, what do you got going on right now?
I am playing a Like, what is it? Like a mandatory student function at the Canterbury School in New Milford.
Captive audience, yep. Dude. That's the best.
Exactly. They got
the,
you back over
the
there, kids, huh?
All the alumni are showing up and playing with the high school students, and we're doing a bunch of, you know, we're doing kind of like a Love Raptory thing, except without the funk. We're just playing covers of like a bunch of, it's like Rihanna and some Stevie Wonder. It's
really
eclectic.
I really hope they're the ones singing the Rihanna stuff.
Hey, listen, you say that in jest, you'd be surprised.
No, I've heard him sing. I'm kind of not kidding.
Well, thanks, man. You know, talk to me about it.
Whole car trip up to Vermont. We went skiing a couple of weeks ago, and he's just, you know, dead silence falls in the car, and suddenly he just starts singing out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's any trip with Nick at any time.
Yeah. And everybody else in the car was just like totally unfazed, like, oh yeah, we've heard this.
No, he's just, that's like, just the thing that happens.
Yeah. You know, and I thought he was going to like sing like, you know, a line or like.
Oh no, I sang a whole tune.
No, he was he sang like an entire tune a cappella.
He goes until somebody goes like, Nick. Nick. Shut up.
Yeah, kind of actually, yeah. No. And that's cool. You should tell me to shut up because I'll keep going.
You sound wonderful. I would never.
But shout out to Dave Overthrow at Canterbury School. He used to run the guitar workshop, the National Guitar Workshop up there, cool. And has like written a bunch of books for Alfred, I think it is, on bass, actually. Oh. So if you know, cool bass thing going on right there. But he's an amazing educator. And
that's like up in up near a lake, up kind of in the middle of the state.
Yeah, well, Candlewood.
No,
I mean,
on the western end, edge of the state.
Yeah, it's like just outside the top of Fairfield County and Litchfield County. Or like,
I think I've been there a couple of times. They've got like a beautiful auditorium with kind of like a semicircle seating for the audience. Is that
the right place? Maybe you're thinking of the high school. This is private school. This is a private Catholic school.
Yeah. I think I'm. I don't know.
Maybe they've changed things. I haven't been there.
I think my friend's kid goes there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it at all.
I'm really glad you guys have had this time to figure that out.
Making for fascinating podcasting.
This is the listenership will be pleased.
Kind of cut all of this anyway. No, I want to.
They checked out 5 minutes in. Who are you kidding?
I clicked out of this video. Are you still doing are you still doing any of the Tracy Joe stuff?
Last thing I did with Tracy Joe was at Caloroso's. Check out Caloroso and Shelton because they were just tasty. And other than that, no. Tracy's got to call me. I'd love to hear from you, Tracy.
Hey, Tracy. Tracy. Call this morning.
But check out TJ and the Toads, tjandthetoads.com. It's a lot of fun. Also, maybe check out Black Rock Social for funsies, you know, a blast of the past. And Mojo, me and John's band,
Mo with
Mojo.
I
think we'll be playing at the acoustic again this coming
May, right? Are we gonna do that?
I hope
we gotta rally the troops.
But
for
that's our thing is Memorial Day weekend, the funky sing along. It'll be our fourth annual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice. Fourth annual funky sing along, reunion show. So hope to see you there.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming. Thank you for listening. And it's Fairfield County Live and Local. I'm John. You can hear me middays from 10 to 2 on 95.9 The Fox. And thanks for listening. We'll see you later.
Thanks for having us, man.